killing 15 people. The Israeli occupation forces resumed the offensive against Gaza on March 18, breaking a two-month ceasefire. More than 1,160 civilians have been killed since then. The death toll from the regime's genocide now tops 50,520, with over 114,770 others injured. And for more updates on the current situation in the Gaza Strip, we're joined by our correspondent Ahmed El-Najjar, who's joining us from Khan Yunis. Ahmed, welcome to the program. Give us an update on the current situation where you are.
Well, the current situation here in Khan Yunis, Zainab, is pretty much like the whole other parts of the Gaza Strip. As of this morning, more than 62 Palestinians have arrived to the different hospitals across the Gaza Strip who have been massacred within the Israeli attacks. But according to the Ministry of Health, just over the past 24 hours, 100 Palestinians arrived to the different hospitals killed by the Israeli attacks. And the attacks don't seem to stop within the Ash-Shuja'iyya neighborhood in eastern Gaza City that has been subjected since the early hours of this morning and during the night hour to extensive military offensive by the Israeli occupation, including the heavily showering by artillery shelling and also the conducting of several airstrikes and deploying quadcopters targeting the displaced Palestinians who are fleeing the Ash-Shuja'iyya neighborhoods after the different massacres and the horrifying massacres that were carried by the Israeli occupation there. The families are now being targeted on their way out of their home. Just about an hour ago, a group of civilians was targeted on their way of being displaced from Ash-Shuja'iyya, and most of them were children. But before that, another civilian car that is transporting civilian people who were in their way fleeing the neighborhood of being displaced again were also targeted, and two people were confirmed killed. But the most appalling scene within Ash-Shuja'iyya was what happened at dawn when the Israeli occupation advanced a detonating robot that exploded within the Turkman neighborhood and damaged an entire residential block and killed no less than 20 Palestinians. Many of them are still missing under the rubble till this now, and this scene is actually what is forcing the Palestinian families in Ash-Shuja'iyya to be displaced all over again. But this scene is simultaneously persisting here in southern Gaza in Rafah City, where the families have been forced to completely leave Rafah City now, as the occupation is pushing ahead with the expansion of its military operations there. The families are forced to leave Rafah, to leave whatever remaining homes and residential buildings in Rafah, to move once again to the unknown, to homelessness here in the so-called safe zone, where the attacks and the atrocities carried by the occupation never stop. Just over the past 2 hours here inside the Al-Mawasi safe zone, an attack by the Israeli warplanes was carried that targeted a displacement tent for people and killed three men within it. But before that as well, we had over the past 24 hours at least three airstrikes carried within the so-called safe zone that killed no less than 10 people. And this is the situation within this so-called safe zone, where the occupation is now forcing the families to flee Rafah or come from the northern parts of the Gaza Strip, only to find killing and death and deprivation as the suffocating blockade persist upon the besieged families who are been living more than 30 days now deprived of any drop of water or any gram of flour to enter, as the occupation till this now is blocking the entry of such needed humanitarian aid and pushing ahead with its mass genocidal attacks across the Gaza Strip.
Yes, exactly, Ahmed. And we can see that the silence of the international community to prosecute and all the Israeli regime responsible has also emboldened the regime to continue these attacks. That is our correspondent, Ahmed El-Najjar, joining us from Khan Yunis with the latest update from Gaza. And on to all the news, displaced Palestinians mourn the loss of their loved ones after an Israeli airstrike on a UN building in Jabalia left people dead, including women and children. They say the attack came without any warning and no place is safe from the Israeli strikes.
There is absolutely no security here. They dropped a missile from the right side and another from the left side. Without warning, they dropped the two missiles without any prior warning. My mom was cooking on fire over there, a child was playing with a scooter in the alleyway, some people were exiting the toilet, others were cooking people who are totally uninvolved, who have done absolutely nothing against the Israelis. They ended up being bombarded, massacred, left without heads or legs.
This is a clinic, housing young children. It's affiliated with the UN, not Hamas or Fatah. As you can see, the martyrs are young children. They're all young boys and girls. In what way do they have the right to kill them? Targeting the clinic itself, not even outside, hitting the classroom over their heads. Where is the United Nations and where is the world?
What are these crimes of the occupation? What are these crimes? Show it to the entire world. Show it to all of humanity in the world, in the east and west of the earth.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has begun his four-day trip to Hungary, defying an international criminal court arrest warrant over his war crimes in Gaza. Netanyahu was welcomed by his Hungarian counterpart, Viktor Orban, in Budapest in an official ceremony. Netanyahu's visit comes at the official invitation of the Hungarian Prime Minister. The invitation has sparked outrage from human rights groups, calling it a cynical attempt to undermine the ICC, with the International Criminal Court criticizing Budapest for ignoring its legal obligation to detain Netanyahu. But after Netanyahu's arrival, the Hungarian government announced that it will withdraw in the coming days from the ICC. The warrant issued against Netanyahu last year alleges that he and his former Minister of Military Affairs are guilty of crimes against humanity for depriving Palestinians in the Gaza Strip of food, aid, and deliberately targeting civilians. And the Israeli occupation forces persist in their military operation in the occupied Al-Quds and throughout the occupied West Bank, killing Palestinians and conducting house raids, arrest, and demolition. Occupation forces have shot and wounded a Palestinian man during an operation to seize and demolish his residence located north of Al-Quds. Additionally, regime forces conducted a raid in the town of Katana, situated northwest of the occupied Al-Quds. In the vicinity of Jenin, occupation forces have also killed one Palestinian and wounded two others. Moreover, in Tokaram, eight Palestinians have been arrested amid extensive search and combing operation, along with house raids. The regime forces have also escalated the aggression in Jenin, employing drones to monitor the area. And for more updates, our correspondent Naka Ahmed joins us now. Naka, welcome to the program. So more violation, more raids, more demolition. Give us an update on the situation where you are.
The situation is in a large turmoil over here, as most of the Palestinian cities are feeling the intensity of the Israeli aggression over here in the occupied territories. Let me start by the latest headline that it's almost breaking news that there has been recorded sounds of explosions inside Tel Aviv now, and no further information about from where these explosions where is the source of these explosions. But Israeli media have said that the explosions have been heard in the Tel Aviv province, in the large larger Tel Aviv area. Also, in the if we are to go back into the occupied territories over here in the West Bank, since the hours of the morning, the Israeli forces have started demolition campaigns in occupied Al-Quds, in the surrounding villages of occupied Al-Quds, in Jabah, in Mukhmas, and in Anata. Of course, we are seeing an escalation in the demolishing campaigns that is taking place against Palestinians and against Palestinian residents. This complies with what the far-right minister Bezalel Smotrich says all the time, that he will try his best to demolish the Palestinian existence inside occupied Al-Quds, where the escalation in these in the demolishing orders and in the demolishing campaigns is clearly is very visible. And for the last year, more than 1,000 Palestinian homes have been demolished inside occupied Al-Quds. This actually represents a big loss for Palestinians, as Palestinians are not allowed nor to build other homes, nor to buy other homes, or to expand the already homes that exist inside occupied Al-Quds. So in Jabah and Mukhmas today, the IOF performed a demolishing campaign and for the family of Al-Ibadi, injuring by live ammunition the head of the family while he was trying to stop and to object to this demolishing campaign. Not only this situation was extremely tense, but in the last 24 hours, the West Bank have bid farewell to two martyrs. One of them is from Nablus. Mohammed Saeed Khamash was shot in the old city of Nablus, and a Palestinian boy, a 15 years old, Omar Ziyud, in Silat al-Harthiyya, where the pretenses for the IOF is always ready. The IOF has issued a statement saying that Omar, the 15 years old boy, Omar, was trying to shoot fire or to fire live ammunition upon the raiding IOF forces in Silat al-Harthiyya, and to throw, as they say, to throw local-made bombs. And these pretenses, unfortunately, we hear these pretenses all the time when the Israeli forces kills, especially a Palestinian child or a Palestinian civilian over here in the West Bank. Yeah. The pretense is always ready. Also in Jenin and in Nablus, the situation in Jenin and Tulkarem, the situation remained extremely tense, as more families are being displaced from the refugee camps of Jenin and Nur Shams.
Well, thank you so much for that detailed update. That is our correspondent, Naka Ahmed, joining us from Ramallah. And on to other news, the Armenian Armed Forces have shot down another advanced U.S. drones as it was violating the country's airspace.
The Yemeni Armed Forces air defenses, with the help of Allah Almighty, were able to shoot down an American MQ-9 drone while it was carrying out hostile missions in the airspace of Hudaydah Governorate. The drone was downed with a locally made surface-to-air missile. This is the second our air defenses have shot down in 72 hours and the 17th during the Battle of the Promised Victory and the Holy Jihad in support of Gaza.
Yahya Seri said the Yemeni military has also targeted the U.S. aircraft carrier USS Harry Truman and other warships in the Red Sea with cruise missiles and drones. He said the operation achieved its objectives. Seri said the Yemeni army operations will continue until the regime's genocide against the oppressed Palestinian people in Gaza stops and the siege of the territory is lifted. He added that the U.S. warplanes launched 36 overnight airstrikes on different parts of Yemen, including Sana'a, Sa'ada, and Hudaydah, leaving a number of people dead and injured. And now to the U.S., where President Donald Trump has imposed sweeping new tariffs on U.S. trading partners, a move that the European Union has labeled as a major blow to world economy.
President Trump's announcement of universal tariffs on the whole world, including the European Union, is a major blow to the world economy. I deeply regret this choice. Let's be clear-eyed about the immense consequences. The global economy will massively suffer. Uncertainty will spiral and trigger the rise of further protectionism. The consequences will be dire for millions of people around the globe, also for the most vulnerable countries, which are now subject to some of the highest U.S. tariffs, the opposite of what we wanted to achieve.
EU chief also said the bloc was prepared for further countermeasures to protect its interests and businesses if negotiation failed. Ursula von der Leyen emphasized that there is still an opportunity to address concerns through dialogue. China also expressed firm opposition to the tariffs on its exports, pledging to take countermeasures. Beijing also criticized the measures as non-compliant with international trade rules that arms legitimate rights and interests of affected parties. Colombia and Australia criticized the U.S. for imposing new tariffs as well, vowing to take measures to protect their industries. Thank you so much for joining us. From me and the rest of the team, goodbye for now.
Diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. Recently, the Atlanta Federal Reserve suggested that the U.S. economy is on the course to contract in the first quarter of this year, triggering fears of a recession. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Fox News Channel has covered this story and tells us more. A former advisor and longtime supporter of the U.S. president said Donald Trump's focus on tariffs as an economic weapon is misguided, and America's economy is very wobbly. Stephen Moore said on Sunday night, 9th of March, "I think that the president's emphasis on tariffs right now is misguided. I think we have a very wobbly economy. We saw a not very good jobs report on Friday, 7th of March. The consumer confidence numbers are sinking and other indicators are not positive." Stephen Moore said, "The economy needs a pick-me-up and tariffs are not a pick-me-up. What is a Trump tax cut. Congress has to get this passed as soon as possible, by Memorial Day at the latest. That will provide the stimulus that the economy needs." Long an advocate of tax cuts, Stephen Moore is the author of the books including Trumponomics, Inside the America First Plan to Revive Our Economy. In 2019, Donald Trump picked Stephen Moore for a seat on the Federal Reserve Board. Moore eventually withdrew after a Fox News Channel reported tax and legal issues, including underpayment of alimony, and other outlets reported racist remarks. Stephen Moore said, "Unrelenting attacks on my character had made seeking a federal role untenable for me and my family." But he told Donald Trump he would continue to be a loud economic voice advocating your policies and would always be at your disposal. Ahead of the 2024 presidential race, Stephen Moore was a chapter co-author for Project 2025, the vast policy plan coordinated by the hard right Heritage Foundation that Donald Trump disavowed on the campaign trail, but which is now influencing White House policy after his victory in the race. Trump and key allies claim the U.S. economy is strong and that imposing tariffs on erstwhile allies such as Canada and Mexico, as well as competitors like China, is the right thing to do. Notwithstanding Trump's own warning to Fox News on Sunday 9th of March, in which he said the U.S. may go into recession. On Sunday, as Trump's tariffs policy continued to heat up trade wars with Canada, Mexico, and China, Stephen Moore told Fox News host Katie Pavlich, "Well, you used the word complicated, and that's exactly what it has been over the recent days, where one day the tariffs are going to go up, and then there's going to be a delay in the tariffs, and then there's going to be a tariff on another country. And it's been up and down and up and down. And by the way, the stock market went up and down and up and down with these things." The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered this story. The Canadian province of Ontario is imposing a 25% surcharge on electricity exports to the states of New York, Michigan, and Minnesota in protest at Donald Trump's tariffs. The Ontario Premier, Doug Ford, said in a statement on Monday, 10th of March, "President Trump's tariffs are a disaster for the U.S. economy. They're making life more expensive for American families and businesses. Until the threat of tariffs is gone for good, Ontario won't back down. We'll stand strong, use every tool in our toolkit, and do whatever it takes to protect Ontario." Doug Ford said the government had told the province's independent electricity system operator that any generator selling electricity to the United States was now required to add a 25% surcharge valued at $10 per megawatt hour to the cost of power. The statement said at this level, the surcharge will generate about $300,000 to $400,000 Canadian dollars a day. Ontario, the country's most populous province, has deep economic connections with the United States that would be hit hard by Donald Trump's threat of 25% tariffs. Last month, Ontario Premier Doug Ford cancelled the province's $100 million contract with Starlink, the satellite service owned by Elon Musk, who has been a key advisor to Donald Trump. The move left some remote communities without other options for how to start providing internet access to their residents. Ontario is also among several provinces to have pulled U.S. drinks off its shelves in protest against Donald Trump's tariffs, which the U.S. president has threatened against Mexico and other fellow traditional allies of the United States. Qatar's Al Jazeera television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. Donald Trump on Sunday, 9th of March, refused to rule out the possibility that the U.S. economy will head into recession this year and that inflation will rise, as his chaotic trade tariffs policy caused uncertainty and market turbulence. The U.S. president predicted that his economic goals would take time and a period of transition to bear fruit. But when asked in an interview on Fox News Channel's Sunday morning futures show, "Are you expecting a recession this year?" Donald Trump demurred. He said, "I hate to predict things like that. There is a period of transition because what we're doing is very big. We're bringing wealth back to America. That's a big thing. And there are always periods of, if it takes a little time, it takes a little time, but I think it should be great for us." When asked whether he thought his tariffs on U.S. imports would fuel inflation, Trump said, "You may get it. In the meantime, guess what? Interest rates are down." He downplayed recent stock market volatility that followed his ducking and weaving over tariff policy on exports from Canada, Mexico, and China, and similar threats to other countries, despite his usual fixation with market performance in relation to the politics of the day and an appetite to claim credit when stocks rise on his watch. He said, "You have to do what's right." Recently, the Atlanta Federal Reserve suggested that the U.S. economy is on course to contract in the first quarter of this year, triggering fears of a recession that could hit the world's largest economy. In 2018, Donald Trump posted on Twitter, now X, that trade wars are good and easy to win, a view that is not widely shared by financial and economic experts. However, on Sunday, he was cautious overall after boasting throughout his election campaign of the swift gains his policies would bring for the U.S. economy and ordinary American financiers. Global stock markets have continued to fall amid fears that a wide-ranging trade war could dent U.S. economic growth and result in a recession, even as the White House has denied that Donald Trump's trade policies are causing lasting chaos.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of God, the All Compassionate, the All Merciful, and may great peace and blessing be upon Prophet Muhammad and his household. Assalamu alaikum, my dear audience, brothers and sisters, and welcome to the series of Talks for Humanity. This is Hamza Azizi. Previously, we talked about the significance of avoiding participating in the sinful gathering and meetings. Actually, the true meaning of the verse وَلَا يَشْهَدُونَ الزُّورِ is that the true servants of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, Ibadur Rahman, do not participate in any meeting, any occasion, any circumstance in which a specific kind of deviation from the right path is taking place. لا يشهدون الزور. لا يشهدون means لا يحضرون, means do not participate in such gathering. Such, not only they do not lie, no, they do not participate in a session in which lying, backbiting, accusation of other mu'mineen are taking place. لا يشهدون الزور. And we said that this is very important, because if a person does not take care of different meetings and parties he participates, of the people he accompanies, of the people he chooses as his friends, gradually he will lose the sensitivity about the sins. After a while, the devil would temptate him that, okay, have you seen that that was not a big deal? You thought that, okay, lying is a very huge thing. No. Have you seen your friend? Your friends lie every day, constantly, and nothing happens. They backbite. They backbite, nothing happens. They accuse other people, nothing happens. They drink wine, nothing happens. So, take it easy. And as soon as he says, take it easy, it comes to my mind that, okay, it seems that it is not a big deal. And that is the beginning of my deviation of the right path. So you see, participating such occasions, such meetings, such gatherings, such parties, led me to acting, to practicing the same sins. That is why Ahlul Bayt, the prophets altogether, they emphasized a lot on taking care of choosing friends and choosing a spouse, because they are going to determine what kind of destination we are going to have. It's been narrated from Jesus that once Jesus' companions, they asked, Ya Ruhallah, Man Nujalis? A very beautiful question. They asked Jesus that whom should we establish a friendship with? What is the characteristic of an ideal friend? Man Nujalis? Whom should we accompany? Man Nujalis? And then Jesus said, Man yudhakkirukumullahu ru'yatuhu. An ideal friend must have three characteristics. Now, follow us. After a short break, we will follow the Jesus word. Welcome back, my dear audience, to the series of Talks for Humanity. This is Hamza Azizi. We quoted the word of Jesus when he was asked about the ideal characteristics of a friend. He said, the first one is a friend should be such person that reminds you of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Man yudhakkirukum Allahu ru'yatuhu. As soon as you face him, you remember Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You remember your Lord, because that person is so busy with the divine instructions. So as soon as you face him, you remember Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The second, so this is the first. The second, وَيَزِيدُكُمْ فِي الْعِلْمِ مَنْطِقُهُ. When he speaks, when he talks, you learn something. Your knowledge will be extended, increased. And the third, وَيُرَغِّبُكُمْ فِي الْآخِرَةِ عَمَلُهُ. When he acts, when he practices, his behavior inspires you. His behavior encourages you to work for the hereafter. That is very interesting. Sometimes we have some friends, as soon as we face them, they start talking about money, cars, houses, wealth. They talk about these issues. But there are some other types of friends that when they act, we see that their acts are in connection with the hereafter. And we enjoy their acts. Not that only we see, no, we enjoy. It means that they have such good behaviors that we are inspired to be similar to them, to act similar to them, like them. So we also are inspired to act for the hereafter. So these are the ideal characteristics that Jesus expressed in our narrations, expressed for the ideal friend. And that is very important. Therefore, based on this interpretation that we elaborated of this part of the verse, الَّذِينَ لَا يَشْهَدُونَ الزُّورِ عِبَادُ الرَّحْمَنِ are the ones, ideal perfect human beings are the ones who do not participate in any gathering, any occasion in which a kind of mediation from the right path is taking place. So that is the true servant of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So there's no need to translate وَلَا يَشْهَدُونَ الزُّورِ to the false testimony, because some of the translators, interpreters of Quran, they interpreted the verse like that, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that the Ibadur Rahman are the ones who do not make false testimony. No, that is correct, but it is only one object of this general meaning. The general meaning is mediation from the right path. So they do not, لا يشهدون means they do not participate, لا يحضرون, they do not participate in such cases, such occasions. Any type of mediation from the right path, no matter it's a lying or accusing or backbiting or false testimony or whatever, all of them are included. There is no need to specifically restrict it to a specific act. Thank you. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Jannah, Jannah, it's all I ever wish for. This life is not eternal, but the next will last forever.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
There has been a staggering increase in the number of Palestinian prisoners who have died in Israeli regime custody throughout the Zionist regime's ongoing genocide of Palestinians in Gaza, including through torture, medical neglect, and other forms of physical injury. To put this increase in perspective, 20% of all recorded cases of Palestinian prisoners dying in Israeli regime custody since 1967 have occurred since October 7, 2023. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, a Palestinian child died in Israeli regime custody recently, the first recorded case of a Palestinian child's death in Israeli regime detention in history, according to the group Defense for Children International Palestine. Walid Khaled Abdullah Ahmad's family was notified of his death by the Palestinian Authority Prisoners Affairs Committee, without details surrounding the circumstances of his death. The committee told the family that Walid had scabies and an intestinal infection. The 17-year-old, who was held in Megiddo prison located in northern Israel, was walking in the prison yard, became dizzy, collapsed, and hit his head on a railing, the DCIP reported. Other child prisoners cried out for help from Israeli prison guards, but none responded. Walid's fellow prisoners carried him to a gate where the guards took him. The Zionist regime is withholding the teenager's body from his family, preventing them from holding a proper burial. This also hinders an independent autopsy that could determine the exact cause of death. Walid was arrested in the middle of the night on September 30, 2024, from his home in the village of Selwan, northeast of Ramallah, in the occupied West Bank. He was first taken to an interrogation center before he was transferred to Megiddo prison. The children's rights group noted that the transfer of prisoners from the occupied West Bank and Gaza into Israel is illegal under international law and constitutes a war crime. Walid was beaten and abused by Israeli soldiers and imprisoned in Israel, where he was fed meager portions of rotten food and subjected to overcrowded unsanitary conditions, while at the same time isolated completely from his family, said Ayat Abu Ikhtiyash, Accountability Program Director at DCIP. Meanwhile, a 34-year-old Palestinian prisoner also died in Israeli regime custody last month. Rafat Adnan Abu Fona, who was from the Gaza Strip, did not have health issues before he was arrested on October 7, 2023, along with his brother Shadi. He was injured during his detention, according to the Palestinian Prisoners Club, but his Israeli captors did not allow him visitations or give details surrounding his estate. Abu Fana died at the Shamir Medical Center in Tel Aviv, but was held at the Rommel prison during his detention. Several prisoners have died during their interrogation by the Shin Bet, the Zionist regime's domestic spying and torture agency, since October 7, 2023. This includes the death of Iyad Rantisi, a medical doctor from Gaza, who was the director of the women's hospital in Beit Lahia in the northern area of the coastal enclave. He died only 6 days after his arrest. The Israeli regime's prosecutor's office decided there was no basis for pursuing a criminal case against Shin Bet interrogators. In Rantisi's case, as well as at least one other, Israeli newspaper Haaretz reported in December. The UN Commission of Inquiry published a report this month demonstrating how Palestinians are often subjected to sexual violence during their imprisonment. These acts were committed with either explicit orders or an implicit encouragement by the top civilian and military leadership, the report said. Male detainees were raped and sexually assaulted. Adnan Alburj, the head of the orthopedic department at Ashrafa Hospital in Gaza City, who was tortured and killed by his Israeli captors, had also been subjected to sexual violence, according to the report. Israeli human rights group B'Tselem published a report last year detailing how, since October 7, 2023, Israeli regime authorities converted more than a dozen Israeli prison facilities, both military and civilian, into a network of camps dedicated to the abuse of inmates. While extensive reports highlighted abuse at Sede Tamon, the B'Tselem report reveals that a similar pattern of abuse was widespread in Israeli regime detention centers across historic Palestine. Testimonies by former detainees uncover a systematic institutional policy focused on the continual abuse and torture of all Palestinian prisoners. In December 2023, the Public Committee Against Torture in Israel warned that Israel's prison service was being transformed from a professional incarceration body to a vindictive and punitive force. By then, a number of prisoners had already died after being subjected to beating, torture, and cruel abuse, including Palestinians who had been detained well before October 7, 2023. Acts of abuse include sleep deprivation, medical neglect, starvation, beatings, stress positions, threats of violence against family members, and unleashing attack dogs, as human rights groups documented. Walid's death raises to 63 the number of Palestinians who have died in Israeli regime detention since October 7, 2023. This includes at least 40 detainees from the Gaza Strip, according to the Palestinian Prisoners Club. This figure constitutes only the prisoners identified as having died in Israeli regime custody by the Palestinian Prisoners Club. The group's director, Abdullah Al-Zaghari, said last year that the real number could be dozens higher. This is the bloodiest phase in the history of the prisoner movement since 1967, the group said last month. There has been a staggering increase in the number of Palestinian prisoners who have died in Israeli regime custody throughout Israel's ongoing genocide of Palestinians in Gaza, including through torture, medical neglect, and other forms of physical injury. To put this increase in perspective, 20% of all recorded cases of Palestinian prisoners dying in Israeli custody since 1967 have occurred since October 7, 2023. Since that year, the deaths of 300 Palestinians in Israeli custody have been recorded. The Zionist regime continues to withhold the bodies of 72 Palestinians who died in its custody, including 61 of those who died since October 7, 2023, among them Walid.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir, and now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you. English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danesh, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, dear listeners. Salam and welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day. So today we reflect on a powerful hadith from Imam Hussein alayhi salam, where he said, "There are five things, whoever lacks them has no real goodness in them: intellect, faith, etiquette, modesty, and good character." I repeat, intellect, faith, etiquette, modesty, and good character. So let's break it down. This hadith doesn't just list virtues. It defines what makes a person truly good, truly good. So, aql, the first one. Without wisdom and sound judgment, sound intellect, a person may act foolishly, harming themselves and others. A person who makes rash decisions without thinking may hurt relationships or fall into destructive habits and so on. So aql is probably the first and maybe the most important blessing that Allah has bestowed upon us. It is through aql that we can acknowledge God, acknowledge ourselves, acknowledge the religion and everything. So it is based on aql that a religion is built up. And the second one is deen, faith. Without faith, life can feel empty. Faith provides a moral compass and keeps a person grounded in truth, grounded in truth. A person without faith may justify any wrongdoings for personal gain, losing their integrity. And you see that a lot around in today's world. And the third one is adab, or etiquette. Good manners are a reflection of respect and self-discipline. a person without etiquette is often rude, selfish, and unpleasant to be around. So someone who constantly interrupts or disrespects others will struggle to build lasting friendships. The fourth one is haya, or modesty. Modesty protects a person from arrogance and immoral behavior. Without it, a person may act shamelessly, losing their dignity and self-respect. So this is not a negative shame. It's a positive one that protects you from, actually you refrain from anything that would degrade you, would lower you, and make you right, for example, embarrassed. So in a world where people seek fame at any cost, modesty keeps a person honorable and respectable. And the last but not the least is kindness, husnul khulq, good character. It's like kindness, like patience and humility, they define a good person. Without them, a person becomes harsh, selfish, and unpleasant. So Imam Hussein alayhi salam gives us a clear guide for self-improvement in this hadith. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring
event.
In Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Good evening. 46 years ago, one of the fastest and most comprehensive processes of power transfer in history was determined through the ballot box. The decisive development was a crystallization of the historic determination and desire of the Iranians to consolidate the foundations of independence, dignity, and national sovereignty. In a landmark referendum held in 1979, more than 98.2% of all eligible voters said yes to the establishing and an Islamic Republic in Iran. The vote held less than 2 months after the victory of the Islamic Revolution is considered as a turning point in the modern history of Iran. On this national day, we stand at a pivotal juncture to critically examine the achievements and challenges of the Islamic Republic of Iran. In a world fraught with adversity, this system has endured decades of turbulence, persisting through foreign-backed conspiracies, economic pressures, and constant threats of military action. Yet its survival raises essential questions about resilience, progress, and the price of independence. I am Bahman Ray, your host, and in this spotlight, we go over the history of the Islamic Republic and the ups and downs it has gone through. Let us begin with a short report.
The Islamic Republic of Iran. Three words that mark one of the most significant milestones in the country's history. Islamic Republic Day, celebrated on April the 1st, commemorates the referendum that established this new governing system, ushering in a new era, endorsed by 98.2% of the voters, as defined by its late founder Imam Khomeini. Islamic Republic, not a word more, not a word less. 46 years later, the sentiments remain just as strong.
The overwhelming presence of people at public celebrations, rallies, and events is a clear sign of the strong support for the Islamic Republic.
We voted for the Islamic Republic after the revolution because it was our slogan, independence, freedom, and Islamic Republic. This choice aligned perfectly with our ideals and aspirations.
Islamic Republic Day embodies one of the key slogans of the 1979 revolution chanted by masses, independence, freedom, and Islam.